We're WSA, and we are in the business of designing environments that work. We create workplaces for all sorts of people, and we've always learned a lot by listening. Why? Because architects who listen are people who design, really design, for others, for everyone, and for all of us. This podcast is about what designers hear when they listen carefully to what people want and what people need. Welcome to Workplace Crafted. Thank you for joining us again for another episode of Workplace Crafted. Today, we'll be discussing the impact of technology on architectural practice and the changes within the profession that are emerging as we grapple with the acceleration of technological change. We're joined by Kai Robb and Jeff Gay, who both serve as a role as quality managers here at WSA. Both of these architects have deep knowledge of how buildings work and significant experience in creating documents that communicate design ideas to contractors and clients. I think you'll be inspired by this conversation, and I hope we spark curiosity related to the future of architectural practice and how technology could potentially elevate the role of the architect to solve the major issues of our day. We've seen an acceleration in emerging technology, and I, for one, as an older practitioner, have seen a lot of change in the way that we practice. So, how do you think that acceleration has impacted what we do?
I'm feeling pretty old myself. Thank you, Tim. When I came into the field back in 2004, we talked about this thing called Moore's Law, which said that computing power would double roughly every couple of years, which meant that processing power, the number of polygons can be rendered at any given moment onto your computer screen. All of this has increased exponentially in that 20 years or so that I've been practicing. When we started, I drew using a program called AutoCAD, where there were a palette of 16 colors that was because a CGA computer graphics array video card could only render that many colors. And you would have to take cyan and green and yellow and convert those in your head to different line weights and thicknesses. That was some alienating labor. Now we've got lovely displays that make things look much more like what you would get when you print it out on paper.
So is that changing the way we design? You're talking about a process that we're using to do the drawing.
Yeah.
But is it changing the way we think?
I think it's changing the way we work, because when I began, you didn't have enough processing power to completely use a 3D model for all of the documentation you might expect to. Over time, we've gotten to that point, but because of that, you tend to let the computer work for you, and you haven't been forced in your mind to consider the three-dimensional implications of design solution that you would propose, because you haven't been forced to translate it from plan into elevation or necessarily think about the maneuvers that you would take to get you there.
Yeah, it seems to me like what you're describing in the early days was really just a way to create more of a repository of the information rather than communicate the design or change your thinking about the design. Jeff, you came from Seattle, and I remember when I first met you talking about the experiences you'd had at a bigger firm, and it seemed like technology was much more impactful.
Well, I think when I first started, I started interning at actually a very small firm. They were still hand drawing, which it was a residential firm. They were a little late in the game, but I helped them make the transition over to AutoCAD. We had one computer in the corner, which, you know, you describe from your experiences 10 years prior to that, but that is what it was like at the firm I started with. And then we transitioned to another firm, or I went to grad school, came back and started working for another firm. And they used AutoCAD. They also used MicroStation. They were a big A&E firm and did a lot of large infrastructural projects. And so we had crossover between all of those and trying to, you know, we were working in SketchUp, we were working in Rhino, we were working in, well, I wasn't, I was working in AutoCAD, but within the office, we were using a number of different tools that were all optimized for different areas of practice that we dabbled in all of them. So we would bring stuff from MicroStation where they were working on these big civil infrastructural roadway over miles and miles of projects, bring that into AutoCAD where we were more native and work, and then transfer out. And I don't know, for me, it was kind of interesting because I only really understood AutoCAD. I didn't understand the other programs, but there were people within our organization whose job was to translate between those things and say, oh, you're an AutoCAD guy, here's what you need in AutoCAD. Oh, you're a MicroStation guy, here's what you need in MicroStation. Oh, I can drop that into Rhino, export it as a skin, and you can drop it into your SketchUp model. You know, we had a guy whose job was serving as a translator.
Yeah. And it seems like I would describe it almost as a hybrid, right? I remember even us working in AutoCAD and other types of software like that, but we also would mix in hand drawing in order to be effective. So now here we are on the other, I'll call it the other side, in 2024. And I just am astonished at the changes in what we can do three-dimensionally and how there is a much more robust set of technology tools that we can use for communication, but also for thinking. Talk a little bit about how those tools are changing the way we interact with clients and how we think about architecture.
I think the three-dimensional visualization has given our clients a sense of understanding the design much more quickly, or democratizing the ability to understand the work product of an architect. Whereas back in the day, you might hire a specialist to draw very precious rendering in order to convey to not just specialists who can read drawings, but give people a sense of the experience of what this design is intended to convey.
We also have media that actually is prolific at helping share design ideas. So I think of HGTV and Chip and Joanna Gaines and how that's gained traction. And you drive around the suburbs in any major city and you're seeing people converting their houses to match a Texas ranch, right? And it doesn't seem totally appropriate in Columbus or Chicago or wherever, but it's happening. And I think it's because they have access to that media. And they also feel like they have empowerment. They're empowered, right? So do you think that our team thinks differently, Jeff? Do you think our young emerging professionals think differently than you did?
I would say so. I mean, I think for me, we always started on drafting board. Even when I was working with IBI, we had our computer over here and our drafting board behind us. And we worked back and forth between the two. And I look around the office today and I'm one of the only people that's always like, hey, where's some trace paper? I need some trace paper. You know, I mean, everybody has a role, but I don't think it's used as often. And I think, I mean, looking at the, you know, you talked about hand sketching versus working with a model. And I think versus working with a three-dimensional model. And I think there's advantages and disadvantages to both. You know, a hand sketch, this, you know, just as a quick hand rendering takes more time than a quick position to look at something, but there's also the ability to cheat it and make it look prettier a lot easier than with a 3D model. You really have to get into the weeds with a 3D model to make it look like this thing. One thing we struggled with a lot in the early days of CAD was presenting something to a client and they felt it was too finished. They felt they couldn't move anything. They felt they couldn't change anything because it was in CAD. It was hard line. And so we were looking for ways to soften that line work and make it look like it was still flexible.
Totally. I think that your point is well taken, that it does take more time to do things by hand. Things do seem to be more accessible to clients because they're not fixed. But I also kind of feel like we're turning the corner on that, right? So now we're using virtual reality, and I'm finding that clients want to be participatory in the digital tool. They want to actually influence a digital outcome, and they feel like being a part of the digital outcome or the digital process is maybe more influential or has more of an impact. And I distinctly remember about a year ago, walking up behind one of our young architects, Ty, and he had Twin Motion open. And my belief system about Twin Motion is it's a tool that we use to illustrate to clients. And we were doing construction drawings. And I asked him, why do you have that open? We don't have enough licenses for that. And he said, I'm using it to learn about the three dimensions of the building as I do my detailing, which I just blew me away. As a leader from a more analog world, I never thought that architects would need to have tools to help them think three-dimensionally, because I just did it.
It is, to me, also a surprise, just because of the way the education used to be. You would have to construct a perspective at some point in school. I don't know if Ty was ever forced to do that.
But is it changing the role of the architect? Are we becoming less the owners of that information and it's more participatory, where we have clients and CMs and other collaborators who may know as much as we do?
I don't know that it necessarily changes the role, but it changes the skill set is changing. You know, my ability to think of something in 3D, that was one thing that kind of set me apart from my peers in the drafting classes. I could look at the three views and kind of quickly construct in my head what the thing looked like. I remember sitting just, you know, in a drafting class next to a kid that was really struggling. And what I figured out was he can't see it. He can't just look at this and this is what it looks like. That didn't come naturally for him. Now, historically, that would have been a barrier for him to enter the field. He couldn't have possibly gotten it. And there's so much more to design than just taking three flat images and transferring them into a three-dimensional object. But that would have been a barrier for him to enter design, whereas now it's not. He can get into it and he can construct something, then he can go look at it and he can learn from it without having to have that mechanical ability to see without seeing. And I think that also, to your point, is what makes it much more accessible to the client, because they don't have to go through that. They don't have to rely on us to translate the information. Now, there's still a lot that we bring to the table, but that little part of it, not so much, which means that we can spend a little time doing other things.
This is shockingly good, in my opinion. What we're talking about here is how the process of technology is allowing more diverse people to participate in the design process, which links to our conversation we just had. And here we have this idea of bringing more diverse viewpoints to enrich design, and never in a million years would I have connected how technology is driving that, because we're able to get different types of thinkers to the table. All right, so let's shift a little bit, because I think this is sort of where we want to get to. So we've been talking a lot about the impact of technology on the way we do things in design and the impacts on the profession. Kai, I want to ask you in particular, since you're dealing with a lot of sophistication and systems within buildings and integrations of systems, do you believe that these technologies are allowing us to have an impact where buildings become more performance oriented?
I think we have the ability to test some of the assumptions that we would have otherwise made using technical tools like energy modeling. So as an extension within BIM, we can determine if the glazing on one facade, if it changes a little bit, what the impacts are of that in ways that we didn't used to have access to. We can use remote sensing technologies to view how a building gets used and what the high impact and high circulation spaces are. We can understand so much more about the existing conditions of a building using things like LIDAR scanning and point clouds.
So we end up having a lot more information in order to have a richer design response, I would say.
And it's a matter of how you interpret all of that extra data.
Which leads to maybe a 2-second discussion related to the future power of artificial intelligence. So there's a lot of discussion about how artificial intelligence will make the architect obsolete potentially. So imagine parameters being entered into a database and a computer being able to make responsive solutions to details that are necessary, right? Much like our specifications are already impacted by artificial intelligence. So if we know that that's coming, I would posit that the role of the architect might shift to bring the human perspective to decision-making or curating the resolution of these technological conflicts.
Absolutely. There's this thing called uncanny valley in artificial simulations of the natural. I think the movie Polar Express, in the way it rendered human faces as a Christmas movie, left some kids feeling freaked out because it was realistic enough, but not abstract in a way that felt wrong to a human. You look at a lot of the AI-generated videos or visual work, and at first glance, it looks okay. But then the more you dig into it, it's very disturbing sometimes in its uncanniness. And I think brings the humanism part of architecture much more forward in terms of we've always fought against the dehumanization of automation in some regard, and we're fighting the same battle on a different day.
Yeah, so you both serve a role here at WSA to help educate our team on technical detailing, understanding how to integrate things and coordinate and increase our quality of the product. And on many projects, you will take a leadership role in quality control. So Jeff, do you believe your job that you're doing now will exist in 10 years?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think to an extent, there's a point where so much of architecture is learning. We are where we are within the firm because we spent time at other levels, learning the ropes, looking at, you know, stacking up studs in a wall vertically, not knowing what we were doing, or, you know, using the wrong, you know, putting the vapor barrier on the wrong side of the sheathing and, you know, that kind of stuff. We learned our way through and figured out how a wall goes together, how the code works, how to keep water out of a building, how, you know, the difference between this and that. And I don't think you can get there without a certain amount of time in the trenches.
So there's a combination of experience and respect for experience, but I also would hearken back to your comment about the student next to you who didn't have the ability to think three-dimensionally when you're trying to do a two-dimensional and do a three-dimensional response. So I think there are certain people who have certain gifts, and I don't think that's going to go away. The gifts that are offered through you as humans is not going to be replaced by a computer, at least in my lifetime. It may be in 100 years, but I don't think in my lifetime.
Well, one of the other considerations, if you think about it in terms of gifts or, you know, focuses or whatever you want to do, when you look at AI, it is working within a certain amount of operational parameters, and it's meant to optimize something or work towards something. And if you have all the sliders up to 11 or all the sliders down to 5, or you have a mix of where those sliders are, you're going to get a different product.
Let's move on to maybe our last topic for this discussion, which has to do with, I guess, creating parity in the field. So we're a relatively medium-sized firm now. We have 35, 36 people, and most architecture firms may only have 5 to 10. That's predominant in the profession. And there's also a growing number of architects who work for huge conglomerates where there are 500, 600, 700. And there's a perception that they have more depth because of the numbers of people. Do you think that emerging tech plays a role in helping those small firms produce design that begins to compete with those large firms?
The promise is there, but I think it depends on how you approach the technology. We'll never be able to afford as many hours to be able to invest as a large firm doing the same kind of work day in, day out.
Because of the size of projects and the profit margins within projects?
That would allow us to invest in adapting technologies to those specific problems.
I think the advantage that a large firm has is they can assign one person to go way into depth on something and then teach a handful of people, you know, be able to rely on that person to do that legwork and bring the full value that that technology has to bear to the firm. I think there's a potential, as far as emerging markets are concerned, for someone who is interested in that to take that ability and develop it and then shop it around to small firms. But the small firms would have to be in a position to invest in that person as a consultant or whatever, or that team as a consultant to be able to really realize that. And I think that's where there's going to, like, I think people end up in a small firm because they want to have more control over the process, more control over the finished outcome. Like that's the allure. That's the draw of a small firm, is having your hand in every step of the way.
But without huge cadre of deep specialists, you may be at a disadvantage. But if future software can actually help accelerate access to individual knowledge within small firms, there will be a level playing field, because you're going to have people who begin to enter and do something. And if computer technology can capture how that process is being done by that expert and train them through some expedited training process, I think that would help bring more parity. Wow, what a provocative conversation. We hope you were able to connect the relevance of technology to the future of practice, and we want to thank you for joining us today. I also want to thank Jeff and Kai for joining me to lead this conversation, and I hope that we continue to hold this dialogue because it's so very important. Thanks to our clients, whose collaboration always allows us to experiment with these technologies in our projects. And again, thank you to our talented team of contributors for the production of this podcast series. Next time, we'll discuss sustainability in the future of our planet and the significant role architects play to address our changing environment.